knocking around the Christmas tree.
Have a holly jolly Christmas.
It's the most wonderful time.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell.
Tired of an endless loop of pop Christmas music? Coming December 24th, sacred music for the Christmas season, LutheranPublicRadio.org. Serenity. Stability. Solemnity. Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the Christmas season, coming Christmas Eve at LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Chance that they will try to build on the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell and actually move the president's position on gay marriage?
Well, see, that's the foundation a lot of the gay supporters are expecting, because they do have a decent record so far based on the twin pillars of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the non-defense of the Defense of Marriage Act. So a lot of supporters are anticipating that the president is close to making that next step, and they're saying that it won't mean a thing unless they can wear that ring. That's basically their position, that the other steps are somewhat incremental unless they get the full right to marry in all 50 states.
That's Andrea Mitchell of MSNBC interviewing Joe Williams, White House reporter for Politico, talking about the political expectations of part of President Obama's support, political support and financial support, the gay and lesbian lobby. Now, it's very important that you solidify your base going into any election. It's very important that you make sure that those who were on your side last time are still on your side this time, not only in terms of their votes, but in terms of their money, too. And if you're running for president, the money is sometimes as, if not more important than the votes. Greetings and welcome to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Tuesday afternoon. It's the 20th of December. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse joins us for the next few minutes to talk about efforts made by the White House to mobilize gay and lesbian voters and financial supporters. A little bit later, Christopher Hitchens passed away, a famous atheist. We'll be talking with Douglas Wilson, who three times debated Christopher Hitchens in various venues and has written in Christianity Today on how to think about the death of an outspoken atheist. You can join us for the next hour. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at IssuesETC. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is a regular guest, founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's authored the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing well. How important is the gay and lesbian voter slash financial supporter to President Obama going into this presidential election?
Well, it's obviously very important to him. Obviously, the gay lobby and between their votes and really more significantly their money, it's very important to him. And you can tell that it's important to him because when he gets the chance, he does things for them where he could have been doing things for the African-American community. He more or less takes the African-American community for granted, I would say. And so I think in a lot of ways you can see that that he's moving to solidify and shore up that LGBT base.
Do you agree with Joe Williams when he says that the political expectations of the gay rights group for this president have not yet been fully met? They expect more before they're willing to give him wholehearted support the way that he would like them to.
Well, I think that I think that's kind of a tap dance that political lobbying groups continually perform a kind of kabuki dance, you might say, with their people they're trying to influence. You know, on the one hand, the gay lobby is certainly not going to support Obama's opponent. You know, there's simply no chance that that's going to happen. On the other hand, for them to support him with enthusiasm, it depends on what he does. And so they are always going to say, "Yeah, that's great. You're our guy, but you haven't done enough for us. What have you done for me lately?" You know, that's always the kabuki dance that supporters have to have with their candidate, whoever that might be. It doesn't matter what the group is, doesn't matter what the issue is. They're always going to try to extract more from their people. So in one sense of the word, it's a complete bluff because they certainly will support Obama no matter what. I don't think there's any conceivable thing he could do at this point that would cause them to stop supporting him. But will they support him more? Will they support him with more enthusiasm? Yeah, he can. They can get him to do more for them so that they will support him with more enthusiasm than they might otherwise.
So when they say, or at least when it's described as though the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell was a good start, what's the ultimate goal then, in your opinion, if they get what they want from this president and a possible future second term?
Do you know what? That's always the question with the gay lobby, is what would be good enough? You know, because we're continually presented with things saying, oh, this is a reasonable first step, or this is a reasonable step, or why can't you support civil unions? I mean, come on, you guys. Can't you support civil unions? I mean, this, what's the big deal? You know, people just want to be nice to each other and love each other and so on. And then you find out that civil unions was simply a stepping stone. You thought it was a compromise. They thought it was a stepping stone. And there's always something down the pike that they want more and that they want further. And so I think that ultimately what the gay lobby wants, and the sex radicals more generally, what they're looking for, is a world where gender is completely wiped out of law, you know, where there are no gender distinctions of any kind, where parenthood is defined in some kind of gender-neutral way, and where marriage has been pretty much deinstitutionalized, where there isn't much to marriage, where anybody can get married, but it doesn't mean anything in any practical or moral or legal sense. It doesn't mean very much because marriage doesn't have any job to do. And that's been the pattern that you see, as you see how Judge Walker, for example, talked about marriage when he overturned Prop 8. If you looked at his definition of marriage, now, by the time Judge Walker and his friends are done with marriage, there's nothing left to marriage but a couple of roommates, you know, because they have to strip out everything that would give it structure or specific terms or demands that would be placed on a couple who are married. All that gets wiped out. And so I think that they're looking for a world with no constraints and a world where the constraints of the body aren't even considered constraints. So it's an open question what the next set of political, you know, particular policies are going to be, what they want. That's hard to say. But you can definitely see that the pattern here is toward the deinstitutionalization of marriage and the sort of institutionalization of a gender-neutral society. That seems to be the ultimate goal, Todd. And I don't know how you're going to do that, because the fact is we're created male and female. We're not created as generic humans. And so if you're going to try to wipe out gender, you're going to have a job on your hands. You know, it can't be done. And it's always good to have a job you can't get done, because that gives the state more and more and more power. And that has been the kind of perpetual strategy of the left throughout the sexual revolution, is let's demand something that's impossible, and then the state will have to have lots and lots of power to do the impossible. So I think that's the sort of thing that you're going to see. As to what are the specific things in the playbook of the various gay advocacy organizations, I wouldn't want to venture a guess.
In terms of sheer political heft, even if we would concede that 10% of the population are gay or lesbian, some variation thereof, that's still a pretty small voting block. But in terms of wealth, I think it's safe to say that we're talking about a group that is generally disproportionately wealthier than the rest of the population. So which is more important to the Obama administration?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, first of all, the percentage of the population that is gay is about 2-3%. Okay, so let's never ever exaggerate those numbers. I mean, about It seems to me the last figures I saw were about 8 to 9 million Americans identify themselves as either gay, lesbian, or bisexual, and half of those were bisexual. So, you know, let's not exaggerate how many people we're talking about out there. But I think for sure it's two things. It's not the number of people. It's the amount of money that they have, because they do have more disposable income. There's no doubt about that gay men have more disposable income than, you know, married men with children to take care of and so on and so forth. But in addition to that, Todd, the thing they really have going for them is focus. They are focused like a laser beam on the issues that matter to them, and they are absolutely relentless about their issues. And you can't say that about most other people, you know. Most groups have a whole variety of things that they care about, and the gay lobby is, you know, not very many people, but they're a group of people who are absolutely dedicated to the things that they want, and that's what makes them effective as a political force.
So what do you expect the president to do, if anything, between now and November?
I think he'll probably keep tap dancing around the marriage question. I don't think he's completely lost his mind, you know, because to flat out say I support gay marriage really does have some political consequences. If you look on the Republican side, the National Organization for Marriage, my parent organization to the Ruth Institute, the National Organization for Marriage has a marriage pledge that they've put out that they've asked candidates to sign. And of the Republican candidates, if I'm not mistaken, they've all signed it except for Ron Paul. So they're putting a lot of pressure on the Republican candidates to be pro-traditional marriage, and the Republican candidates think it's in their interest to do that. Well, that means there are a lot of people who want traditional marriage. So I don't think Barack Obama is going to be dumb enough to just flat out say, let's have gay marriage, because he would certainly alienate the African-American community. He would certainly alienate a lot of the other ethnic groups that traditionally support Democratic candidates. But what I do think he'll do is, if there's a second term, he will move ever more strongly into their corner and if not actually enact some kind of federal gay marriage, he'll take steps towards it, or get out of the way of other programs that they have going to achieve the same end. So refusing to defend DOMA, for example, you know, really was a pro-gay marriage move without Obama having to say, I'm in favor of gay marriage, you know. So it allowed him to, you know, kind of do that little tap dance that we've been talking about, of being in favor of something without being in favor of something, and being for it before he was against it, and all of that kind of thing. So he's got a tightrope that he has to walk, and he won't jump. He won't jump until after the election, I wouldn't think.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is founding president of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason universities, and she's authored the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. And an early Merry Christmas to you, Jen.
Thank you, Todd. Merry Christmas to you.
When we come back, Douglas Wilson will join us. We'll reflect on the death of famous atheist Christopher Hitchens.
Looking for a church that has a small, family-like atmosphere, yet strives for excellent liturgical worship with outstanding music while focused on God's Word and sacraments? A church located in the heart of St. Louis and reaching out to the neighborhood with Jesus Christ and Him crucified? I'm Pastor John Helwig of Emmaus Lutheran Church at 2241 South Jefferson in St. Louis. I invite you to join us for Bible class Sunday mornings at 9 and worship at 10:30. Visit us on the web at emmaus-stl.org.
Unto You, a Christmas sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
The angel can tell those shepherds and tell us, this child has been born unto you. This child has been born for you.
And we'll send you a CD of this sermon for any size gift before the end of the year. Make a secure online donation today, issuesetc.org. Thanks for thinking of us at the end of 2011.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. So visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastor to hold a seminar in your area. Just go to theclcc.org.
Here are two new ways that you can promote Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. business card and the Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer. Simply go to the support page at issuesetc.org, click Issues Etc. business cards, print the page on suitable stock paper, and cut along the lines. We also have an 8.5 by 11-inch flyer for the bulletin board at your church. Issuesetc.org, go to the support page, click Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer, and print.